Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Since mid-March, most Marylanders have been inundated with potentially life-saving information about the coronavirus. It's been crucial to keep up to date about symptoms to watch for, best practices to protect ourselves against the virus, and recommendations of who might be at greater risk. What if these messages aren't reaching you, or you don't have a reliable way to access information or healthcare? What if messaging has just seemed confusing? Joining us now is Dr. Susan Mani, Chief Population Health Officer at LifeBridge Health. She leads a statewide task force on vulnerable populations at high risk for COVID-19. The task force aims to better identify where to disseminate information and resources. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mani.
Good morning, Sheila. Thank you for having me.
What is the Task Force on Vulnerable Populations? When did it start?
Sure. It actually started in March. And what it was an early recognition across a number of different stakeholders across the state who were very used to working with our vulnerable populations and our communities in normal times. And we quickly understood with COVID, this is certainly not normal times. And we knew that our populations and communities that we were used to working with would really have some disproportionate impacts from COVID. We knew in our vulnerable communities where there were significant socioeconomic disparities that might limit access to health care or to food or to transportation, or people who might be living, for example, in multi-generational houses or congregate facilities where they might have challenges around the social distancing, that we needed to think about a different strategy, and we needed to think about different ways of tactics to really make sure we were getting information and resources to our vulnerable populations. So knowing that, there were a number of us that came together and reached out actually to the Maryland Department of Health, who were very also interested and focused on this. And what we did was we created a statewide task force, bringing together different folks like the United Way, Maryland Food Bank, Meals on Wheels, different hospitals and health systems like LifeBridge, for example, the Maryland Department of Health. And what we said was we really needed to try to figure out information and be able to give that information and data out to our hospitals and our health officers who were dealing a lot with this pandemic to be able to target their resources and think about the resources in the state that were needed to really meet the needs of our vulnerable populations. And that's really how we all came together, started in March, and it's really taken off since then.
Let me home in on what data do you look at?
It's a great question. One of the things when we all got together, we said, you know, we had to have some mechanism of understanding how the pandemic has worked so far and who is really being severely affected by this COVID-19 to see how we could target our resources in terms of outreach. So what we did was reached out to a group called Socially Determined, and that's a group that we've been working with at LifeBridge. We've been looking at what we call social determinants of health, so those socioeconomic factors that can impact our health outcomes. And we asked them to do that same work at a state level related to COVID-19. So what they did was they were able to gather information at a state level and working very closely with our health information exchange called CRISP at a state level. And they gathered information in demographics. So, for example, we knew that with different age groups, there was a higher risk of developing severe outcomes from COVID. Different groups had different rates of going into the hospital, ending up on a respirator, or dying. So that was important information that we needed from a demographic information. We also were able to get clinical information around communities and individuals. We knew that people with underlying chronic conditions like high blood pressure or diabetes were much more likely to have severe outcomes.
That's Dr. Susan Mani, Chief Population Health Officer at LifeBridge Health. On the record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about a statewide task force to identify vulnerable populations for high COVID-19 risk and more accurately disseminate information and resources to them. I can understand demographic information that might, for example, start with census data. That kind of data I get. But how do you know who's got underlying diseases?
Sure. So the good thing was, because we had partnered with CRISP, which is our health information exchange, they do have information because they work with different groups around what we call payer-based data. So, for example, there's information from Medicare or Medicaid, and they do have information about the rates of clinical conditions or the kinds of clinical conditions by geography or by individuals. So we were able to incorporate that and understand, you know, in communities, what is the overall level of high blood pressure or diabetes or in those particular individuals under Medicare and Medicaid, for example. So that gives us an idea of aggregate information that we could use at a community and individual level.
How fine-tuned? What are we talking about, precincts? Are we talking about neighborhoods? I mean, what is the geographic area?
Sure. We could actually get down to a neighborhood level. So oftentimes with the census data and some of the other data, sometimes you can get down to a zip code level. And in this case, we knew that we really needed to be able to get down into that neighborhood level beyond the general zip code. So we were really able to get down to that particular area. And then for healthcare systems who are working with individual patients that they know, we were actually able to get down to an individual level. So that because they knew what kind of chronic conditions a person might have, we were actually able to give them a sense of the risk of those individual patients for developing severe COVID. So, and then the other piece of data that we use is socioeconomic risk or disparities in information. We knew pretty early on that if we take a look at many natural sort of disasters or conditions that have happened, there are health disparities that occur when there are socioeconomic disparities. So the benefit that we have with Socially Determined is they were also able to take a look at, within a community, the financial factors. We are able to take a look at the proximity to a hospital or healthcare access or proximity to grocery stores and transportation.
So what have you discovered?
So adding all of that up, what we were able to find was that by each county or jurisdiction for a health department, we were able to give them a sense of the communities that were at greatest risk using all of these factors. And that was incredibly important information because these are the public health departments that were very much focused on thinking about how do we do outreach? How do we make sure that there's testing happening in the communities, particularly at greatest risk? So to be able to give them that information was extremely powerful. So, for example, I know that with one health officer that we worked with and their team, when they took a look at this map and could see the different communities with different levels of risk, they knew already inherently because they knew their jurisdiction, some of those locations, but to be able to see it on a map and then we can overlay some of the facilities that are, you know, in those neighborhoods, it really allowed them to say, aha, let me make sure we are reaching out and partnering with these particular buildings and these particular groups with the work that we are already doing so that we can prioritize that. So it was incredibly effective to have those kind of conversations. We also found it was very helpful for hospitals.
I was going to ask, besides local health department, who else is doing this work?
We partnered also with the hospitals because we found that that was another group that was doing a tremendous amount of outreach during this time. We understood because of the social distancing, a lot of the fear of COVID that was happening, and many people were moving towards telemedicine. And so that was the way they were trying to maintain relationships with their patients and their communities. But we also recognized they, too, needed some assistance to understand who was at greatest risk in their population to make sure that outreach was really happening and prioritized as well. So using this data, we were able to give the different hospitals and health systems the ability to say, here's your group that has, you know, level 5 or highest risk, or, you know, all the way down to level 1 lowest risk, so that they could utilize that information So, for example, at LifeBridge, we use that to make sure that our care managers and providers have that information as they were doing that outreach to say, you know, I'm concerned about you. You know, we don't want you to get COVID because our concern is, of course, that if you do, there might be a severe outcome. Let's make sure, do you have access to the medications that you need? Or are you having any symptoms? Let's make sure you have the education that you need. And interestingly, as we did that outreach, what we were starting to find is not everyone, and again, I think this is, you know, something that we know, had access to be able to do telemedicine visits, for example. They may not have the computer equipment or the Wi-Fi or the other kind of service that might be needed to do some of that. So that started to open up another set of conversation of how do we start thinking about providing those services directly into the community when many people may not have the ability to do drive-through testing or have a testing site in their neighborhood.
Dr. Susan Mani is LifeBridge Health's Chief Population Health Officer. She's chairing a statewide effort to collect and analyze data that pinpoints the counties, cities, and neighborhoods where COVID-19 is most likely to flourish. Short break on the record, and then what are the next steps? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us on WYPR.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the data-driven statewide Task Force on Vulnerable Populations. The project started in March to help identify counties, cities, and neighborhoods that are at high risk for COVID-19. The intent is to use the data to help determine where to deploy public health information and resources. Dr. Susan Mani is with us. She leads the task force. Dr. Mani is LifeBridge Health's Chief Population Health Officer. So the task force, in collaboration with Socially Determined, the data analytics company in D.C., has collected this huge amount of data. How is it presented? How can users access the information?
Sure. One of the things that we found was very important early on is to have a visual mapping, especially because when we're thinking about the state and the different counties, it helps folks really see a visual map by the different neighborhoods of where their greatest risk communities or populations are. So with the health department and with the public health groups that we were working with, we supplied a map for their particular county. And so it shows the relative risk within those communities in a very nice visual way. And for the health systems, because we were working with CRISP already has a portal which they provide a great deal of information to the hospitals and health systems about their populations and their individual patients. So we were able to integrate this data directly into that system, so that they could see for their individual patient the actual risk. So what we really tried to do was harness the energy of this data and provide it to the different groups on the way that made the most amount of sense for them, given the kind of work that they did. For public health agencies, they have to think about that entire geography that they have. And then for our hospitals and health systems, they have to think about the individual patients that they have.
This is a huge amount of data analysis that was done very quickly, but now it's done. Is the task force's work over, or is there a next step to this?
Oh, no, great question. Task force is ongoing. One of the things that we had found was very much a need also to think about how to do testing within neighborhoods. So one of the things that was done through the task force starting in April was to set out a number of teams that we call testing and manage in place teams. And they would actually work with the health departments in those local areas. And we were working with a number of them to have teams go on site into those neighborhoods and communities at greatest risk to actually do testing right in those areas. And that could have been in a homeless shelter, in an elderly congregate facility, for example, in a residential neighborhood, working hand in hand with the health officers and the public health officials. So that has been very successful, and based on that, we're trying to figure out a way of expanding those services throughout the state.
I'm not sure I really get what information the analytics team provided that wasn't really pretty obvious from the beginning. As you said, these actors, the health departments and the hospitals, know their patient load.
I think what it helped to really do, and in speaking to folks, is you are absolutely right. Many people have a general sense of where their neighborhoods are, their significant socioeconomic concerns or disparities. So in that sense, I don't think we were providing new data to them. What this allowed was, because we knew that there were different aspects of risk, so let's say within a certain community or a certain overall general area, since we were adding the elements of age and the demographics as well as the clinical conditions, if you and I both lived, for example, in the same community, but I was 85 and I had underlying high blood pressure and diabetes, and we both shared the same socioeconomic sort of environment, but you were younger without underlying health conditions, I'm going to be at much greater risk than you are for having a severe outcome. So it really allowed us to kind of fine-tune some of that risk, so that as the public health departments as well as the hospitals and health systems are doing their outreach, they can really start to think about, where do I prioritize my outreach and my resources first? So it really helps to take that ability of knowing your population and doing what we call risk stratifying, so that you can be pinpoint on how you go one after another in terms of your resources and help prioritize that. It helps kind of saying, where do we start first? Otherwise, it can sometimes feel almost overwhelming when you're taking a look of an entire area and feeling like you have to, you know, at the end, you have to manage all of that risk, but where do you start? And I think that really helped a lot of the conversations for folks. Where do we start?
That's Dr. Susan Mani, Chief Population Health Officer at LifeBridge Health. On the record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about a statewide task force to identify vulnerable populations for high COVID-19 risk and more accurately disseminate information and resources to them. What kind of feedback are you getting from people you're working with?
Really incredible. Being able to provide that kind of insight, I can tell you, working with one of the health departments that we had, it was nice to be able to provide that map, because you're right. They do know the neighborhoods. And then when we showed them the visual map of it, it was just this kind of aha moment. They mentioned, we knew on the east side and the west side, we needed to think about our populations. But because this map allowed us to also overlay some of the buildings and facilities in that area, it allowed them to start that conversation of, let's make sure we're reaching out to these particular folks to collaborate and with our resources. So it allowed them to kind of get going in that vein. And certainly from us as health systems, that has also been very incredibly helpful. We have found a number of folks reaching out and say, it was great to be able to have this risk stratification. Again, it's not as if they weren't doing an outreach, but it allowed them to say, and then we're going to focus and make sure we're getting all of our fives and make, as we're reaching out to help them understand and provide education and make sure they can really connect with us. So I think it just opened up a different avenue of conversation in a way that we hadn't had before.
So when is the next logical point for us to get back in touch with you and ask how it's going?
I think probably in another month or so, we'll have a better idea of exactly how that expansion looks. What does it look like working hand in hand with the various health officers as well as the hospital and the health system?
That's very interesting. I really appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me and being able to share this information. It's incredible how this has been working out.
Dr. Susan Mani is LifeBridge Health's Chief Population Health Officer. She chairs the effort we've been discussing, the data-driven statewide task force on vulnerable populations to identify those at high risk for COVID-19. The information helps county health departments, hospitals, and others to figure out the most effective places to deploy life-saving information and resources. We have a link to more information about it at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. As many Maryland jurisdictions edge into reopening, a reminder that wearing masks in public is still strongly recommended, as is avoiding large indoor gatherings. Though numbers of those hospitalized for COVID-19 continue to fall, there are still confirmed cases each day. I'm Sheila Cast. This is WYPR. From all of us at On the Record, stay vigilant and safe, and most of all, please wash your hands often and make sure it's for 20 seconds. Be back with us tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.